This podcast contains explicit language. Please use your own discretion.
Welcome to this, the first episode of Upstairs at the PNP, a lively, unvarnished conversation about the Philadelphia city elections held in the indescribably elegant surroundings known as the Upstairs Room at the Pen and Pencil Club of Philadelphia, also the PNP. I'm Chris Cetullo of WHYY, and I'm joined by Dave Davies, senior writer at WHYY. Hey, Dave.
Hey.
Patrick Kirchner, major domo of the Cityfied blog on Philly Mag.
Patrick. Hi, Chris.
Anna Gamboa, the political writer for Aldea.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Holly Ottermine, the incredibly glamorous other blogger for Citified.
Hi.
So, guys, something pretty big happened today as we speak here at the Pen and Pencil in this race. So let's talk a little bit about it. Dave, what was it and what do you think it means?
Well, I think this was historic. You had five African-American elected officials, you know, fairly prominent in the case of three of them, endorsing a white mayoral candidate in a competitive Democratic primary. And that hasn't happened in the 32 years since I've been covering politics. I can think of when Ed Rendell ran in 91, he got one endorsement. Ironically, Hardy Williams, the dad of Anthony Williams, who's now in the race. In 2007, Tom Knox, the millionaire, got Councilwoman Janie Blackwell. But this is a group of well-known and established African-American leaders backing a white candidate against a well-known African-American. I think that's major.
That's like big flies, men bites dog, Phillies win. I mean, does it really matter, though, to the average voter who endorses whom? Patrick?
You know, I agree that it's a historic development. I think it's fascinating. But I think it's obviously a good day for Jim Kenney, and, you know, getting a good chunk of the black vote is his sort of his path to victory. But you know who had Dwight Evans' endorsement in 2007? Dwight Evans. And what did he get, Dave? It was like 6%, 4%, 3% of the vote. It was something embarrassingly low. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good day for Jim Kenney. Certainly, I agree that it's a historical development in terms of the way the sort of political class thinks about mayoral politics and race and mayoral politics, and whether or not, you know, you can, as like an African-American political leader, endorse, you know, a white candidate when there's a well-known black candidate in the race. I think that's all very important. I think it totally remains to be seen whether or not it has an impact on Election Day.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just rely on that endorsement to get you votes. You have to do the ground game. You have to go into Marianne Tasco's ward and make sure that there's support there, and you have to, you know, possibly put them on TV ads, right? These black politicians saying Jim Kenney is a good guy and vouching for him. That, I think, could make a difference. I think it's also worth noting that two of Jim's former colleagues on city council, Marianne Tasco and Cindy Bass, and a probably soon-to-be councilwoman, Sherelle Parker, who's running for Tasco's old seat, have endorsed him. And that says something, I think, in the context of, you know, Michael Nutter didn't win any of council's endorsements, and now here we are today where him and council have a pretty acrimonious relationship. So I think that's, you know, good for Jim too.
So you mentioned way back in the day Anthony Williams, Senator Anthony Williams' dad, Hardy Williams, endorsed Ed Rendell over a couple of African-American candidates. So is this a case of intergenerational payback as a bitch for Senator Williams?
No, I don't think so. I think this group of people in the Northwest have sort of been this loosely cohesive group of sort of progressive African-Americans whose base is seen as a bit more middle class, a bit more connected to white liberals, and they've often had tensions with the West Philly crowd. And then I've heard of other grudges that may have driven this. I mean, people were telling me today that John Dougherty, the, you know, influential leader of the Electricians Union, promised to pay the campaign expenses of Cindy Bass, the councilwoman, and Sherelle Parker, who hopes to become a councilwoman, and that's what did it. They've both denied it to me.
Yeah, well, let the record show that we're 5 minutes into the first episode of PNP, and we've had our first Johnny Doc mentioned. Just record that for posterity.
He's everywhere.
So we probably should not move from this topic without mentioning a little bit what George Borrell said Sunday on one of the talk shows. And this might be the last time George Borrell has ever mentioned a political podcast, but you were kind of struck by that.
Yeah, he was this is the Channel 6 program called Inside Story. And at the end of it, he was asked, what's your inside story? He said, these African-Americans are going to endorse Jim Kenney. And he said, Congressman Bill Gray and State Representative Dave Richardson, who were sort of some of the founding fathers of this Northwest Coalition, would be, he said, turning in their graves.
Wow.
If they saw this group of elected officials. And I forget the exact word, something like, you know, abandoning that office. Now, I didn't say anything about race, but that was clearly the import of it. My sense of that is that kind of his view is that Anthony Williams comes from the background of Hardy Williams, kind of the father of black independent politics in this town. Jim Kenney grew up at the knee of Vince Fumo, a Democratic machine politician from South Philadelphia who went to jail for corruption. How could you pick a guy like that mm-hmm. over a guy like Tony?
So let's look at the campaign generally. It's my sense, and it may be because I just don't get out much anymore. I sit in an office at WHYY, but this is, to me, compared to 2007, last time we had an open seat and kind of a full and interesting slate of candidates, this one has been kind of weird and slow to develop or establish a narrative that you can sort of get your arms around. Holly, what do you think? I mean, you've been through a couple of these. How does this strike you so far?
I mean, it's as sleepy as you're saying it is. Mm-hmm. A big reason for that is that the candidates don't have money compared to past mayoral campaigns, and so we just are hearing less of them, and they got off to a later start. I think if you are going to look at which campaign, using this relatively low bar, is the best, I would say it's probably Jim Kenney's, given that he entered the race much later than some of the other candidates, particularly Anthony Williams, who, you know, was running since November officially, but probably for about 2 years before then in reality. He was able to lock down a lot of union endorsements, some LGBT endorsements. He, you know, has probably the most professional campaign staff.
He has definitely profiled himself as the overachiever mm-hmm. in every sense. In their campaign outreach, the amount of emails we received from his campaign,
and the
endorsements. So I think the media has profiled him definitely as the front runner.
Yeah, this has been like a foreign movie that you walk into, and after 15 minutes, you're not sure whether you want to stay.
Totally. The subtitles don't seem to be keeping up with the dialogue.
But yeah. I think it'll kick in. You know, I mean, we're 6 weeks out now. I think, you know, in the last month, they will really engage. We'll have some clear competitive candidates, and then a second tier, and I think it'll get lively.
So you mentioned money, Holly. My understanding is from the candidates, the reason why they don't have any money is these brand new campaign finance regulations that are so fussy that no one understands. Is that right, Dave?
Oh, this is what drives me crazy. I mean, people have been saying, "Oh, I can't raise any money with the limits." Well, you know, Mike Nutter raised $4.6 million in 2007 under the limits. Now, there's a caveat there. Back then, there was a millionaire in the race, which triggered a doubling of the limits. But if you get out and raise
the unforgettable Tom Knox.
Yeah. You know, if you get out there and you're smart and aggressive and persistent about it, you can raise money. But it is different this time, there's no doubt. It's no doubt, both because, as Holly says, people got in late, and because there are these independent expenditure groups, the monster created by the geniuses at the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. that now are in a position to spend big money.
Yeah, I mean, smart, aggressive, persistent. I think that's true. I think if the candidates were that, they would be raising more money. But they're not being all that smart, aggressive, or persistent, sort of in any facet of the campaign. I think that, you know, they're being as smart, as aggressive, and persistent about this as they are about anything else. And yeah, they're having a heck of a hard time raising any money. And I do think that's a good chunk of the reason.
Gently and calmly, Patrick Kirkser brings the hammer down on the entire field here.
I think that's part of. Partly explains the lack of interest and sort of lack of enthusiasm around the race generally. It's true, we're in the final 6 weeks. I mean, it should pick up a bit, but does anyone really expect like it to be at all like it was in 07 in these final 6 weeks?
Yeah, my memory, no. Correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm just some old fart sitting around remembering things more fondly, but we'd had several narratives by this time in 2007. You had Kenny, you know, brusque millionaire by the election with spaghetti dinners. You know, is Chaka Fatah the front runner? What will Bobby Brady's hidden clout mean? All these things, and then the last 6 weeks were all about the surge of the dark horse. I'm Mike Nutter. If I'm not mistaken, it was right about this time in April when I was at the Enquirer. The Enquirer and the Daily News both endorsed Nutter and, you know, pretty much changed the tenor of the campaign from that point on. And, like, just nothing has quite coalesced. You know?
I mean, we have some of the similar narratives. I mean, we have Ken Tony Williams' rich supporters buy the election, right? It's similar to the question of whether or not Tom Knox could buy the election.
Yeah, how fast can Tony Williams run away from the words charter school?
Right. You know, can Jim Kenney steal the race? He is something of a dark horse candidate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, but it's like it's the fact that it's the super PACs that are going to seemingly determine so much of the action over the final 6 weeks. I mean, I feel like that depresses enthusiasm too, because it's not the candidates aren't really in control of their own destinies in the same way they were in 07. You know, I mean, Nutter surged, you know, with 6 weeks to go 8 years ago, and he had the money to do it, and he was controlling his own destiny. He controlled his own message. I mean, you know,
which was delivered by his daughter,
right. You know, tailored by Austin.
So in Citified the other day, you guys were talking about a factor of that with its super PAC factor, that there's really no control or there's no limits or governors on what messaging the outside ads can. They can go as down and dirty as they want because it doesn't blow back on the candidate in quite the same way.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know that they'll do that, but they are free to. I mean, they are free to hit below the belt with a lot more abandon than a candidate would. You know, the candidate has to own their own message. They can plausibly deny. I mean, that's the whole setup, right? Is no coordination, so they can plausibly deny having had a role in a below the belt attack ad funded by an IE that wants to get them elected or a super PAC that wants to get them elected. I think you can get Kafka-esque with it if you want to, right? I mean, you could be just a billionaire from the suburbs hoping to get Tony Williams elected, and instead of running an ad in favor of Tony Williams, you could theoretically. If Jim Kenney is gaining on Williams, you could toss a nice Lynn Abraham ad out there and say, hey, look at Lynn Abraham. Isn't she an interesting candidate?
All right, let's let the record show. I think we've been talking for 12 minutes, and this is the first time Lynn Abraham's name has come up. So please, people, explain to me the Lynn Abraham campaign. And a long silence falls over the table.
I mean, he has outreach to Aldea. I can tell you in order of the candidates, definitely Jim Kenney's on top of the candidate that sent us the most stuff, and then it would be Nelson Diaz, Anthony Williams, and then Lynn Abraham, then Doug Oliver, and at the very end is Milton Street. But, you know, she has been very responsive to us at the same time. I talked to her back in January, and, you know, we talked about her outreach with the Latino community besides her general campaign trail. So
Does she have some credibility stored up with the Latino community from her days as DA and visiting neighborhoods? And
yeah, well, the question was, how do you plan to outreach to the Latino community, right? Mm-hmm. And she talked about her involvement through Latino organizations and community programs. Now, I think most of the candidates have shown outreach to the Latino community, and they have talked to us about the strategies they try to implement with the Latino community. So they definitely have acknowledged the importance of the Latino community, but I'm not sure they completely understand the necessities of the community.
Okay, since we're on the topic, we do have for the first time a Latino mayoral candidate, Nelson Diaz. I could have just asked the question, why is he so mad all the time? But no, just tell me like how his candidacy is striking you. Is it striking any sparks in the community?
It is historical for the Latino community, the fact that back in January, we had two candidates. Now, you know, it's only one. I was actually disappointed that Ken Trujillo left the race because it would have been very interesting to see the dynamics between the two of them. For me, the coverage of the election started with the official announcement of Nelson Diaz and his campaign. I asked him a question in the press conference, and it was about the division between the Latino community, the fact that there was a Puerto Rican candidate and a Mexican-American candidate. And I had a very strong reaction from Nelson Diaz.
Yes, I know, which we were very happy to play on Dave Davies' last WHYY election special.
Oh, he went off.
I asked the question, and why is he so angry?
Yeah.
I don't think he's angry. Let's say he's passionate, maybe.
Okay, there you go.
I was disappointed to see that Ken Trujillo left the race. But I think Nelson Diaz has made an interesting and a good candidate.
Well, he's certainly been substantial. I mean, he's put out a lot of substantial ideas on things.
Yeah, I don't know that he's caught fire. I mean, I think that one of the interesting things about this race is the lack of public polling information. So we're sort of operating in the dark here, relying on candidate polls that get leaked or don't leaked, and you're not ever quite sure how much of the poll has been leaked, and you're not getting the cross tabs. So we're kind of feeling around in the dark, but judging from those, it doesn't look like Nelson has broken out of his sort of demographic box, which obviously he'll have to do to be anything other than a second-tier candidate.
Right, so just so that everyone gets equal time, let's talk about the candidate with the nicest smile in the race, at least according to Ed Rendell, Doug Oliver. It's interesting what he's doing, and he seems to impress people.
Yeah, this is a guy who's 40 years old. He is by far the youngest mayoral candidate in the race, and he's trying to target the millennial vote. And he points out that this is a huge chunk of the population, but, I mean, the question is, do they actually vote? And I think, the answer so far has been, no, not really. Can he mobilize them? I mean, I don't see any evidence of it right now. But he's an interesting guy. Like Ed Rendell said, he's got a great smile. He's attractive. He, is passionate. He's energetic. I think he's going to run for another office in the future and will definitely win. Obviously, it's not this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that he gave up a good job to go on this crusade, which I would think any kind of, hard-boiled professional would have said, I mean, you can't be a factor here. I mean, you can't make a campaign as an unknown going around to a bunch of candidate forums where there are a couple of hundred people and reporters who are going to try and get six people into a story. It's just, you're never going to break out of that box. But maybe he gets enough attention to run somewhere someday. Does anybody see any ideas in this campaign? Are there any new, anybody impressed with anybody's plan to do anything about anything?
That there have been, individual planks in individual plans that have been moderately interesting, and that's about, that's about as far as I can
It's funny. I was thinking about
Patrick,
schools.
Patrick, don't go so overboard, please. dial it down a little bit, will you?
Everybody says education's the big issue, and people have had things to say about education, but it's like if you go into Taco Bell, there are 50 items on the menu, but it's basically like seven ingredients recombined.
Right.
And the education planks are all like, oh, we're going to recollect taxes better. We're going to sue Harrisburg and make them do what they're supposed to do. But
on education, all their key planks are things that they don't have power to do, which I guess is forever the fate of a...
And have been raised and tried before. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look at it. Part of that is inevitable when you're talking about as fundamental a problem as education funding. It's something basic has got to change to solve that problem, whether it's some big change in the tax structure, like a lot more taxes, some big change dynamic in Harrisburg, some massive asset sale. Something big is going to have to change to solve that problem. So, I mean, I hate to decry them as all of them as unrealistic because they're all saying something big needs to happen. Mm-hmm. It's a big problem. But it hasn't been a lot of creative thinking.
Let's put the question this way. I understand you guys are not in the business of endorsing people in a race that you're covering, but I was talking to Kevin McCory, WHYY's education writer, right before I came over here, and he was saying, one of the things he thinks about is which one of these candidates has the best crack at going to Harrisburg around the education issue, with Tom Wolf, coming out with an extremely bold plan to essentially completely remake the tax structure of Pennsylvania to fund the schools better. Which one of these candidates has the best chance of being a good assistant voice for Tom Wolf in that effort? Is it Tony Williams, the guy with a certain amount of cred on the opposite side of the aisle? Is it Jim Kenney? Is it
I guess your instinct is to say Tony Williams. On the other hand, Tony's school agenda and school vision for schools seems to not align all that well with Tom Wolf's or sort of more mainstream, more traditional democratic school policy. So, while Tony's the one with experience in Harrisburg and, a certain number of friends in Harrisburg, I don't know that that actually translates given his views on schools and the Wolf administration's views on schools into being the most effective advocate, actually.
How about the other former state senator in the race, Milton Street? What do you think?
I think no.
He's been a Republican and a Democrat.
Exactly.
Body's bipartisanship.
His bipartisanship, bipolarity. let me ask a sort of semi-serious, at least political question about Milton Street. Like, assuming, like, I'm sorry, you guys follow this. For those of us keeping score at home, I've lost track. Is he truly on the ballot for good?
He is, but there's been an appeal filed, so he's on there for now.
Okay, for now.
Yeah.
The case remains alive.
Yeah, right. Let's say he stays on the ballot. Does he in any way scramble the arithmetic on Election Day?
I think he's got the potential to get some votes. Mm. And I think, you know, I think for Anthony Williams to lose this, he has to stumble. And that can happen any number of ways. You know, it's interesting to me. There have been a number of sort of negative-ish stories about Anthony Williams. Stories about his wife being a lobbyist for the fracking industry. Does all of this have an effect? I don't know. I do think, you know, Patrick, you were talking about the super PACs and the messages. I do think you're going to see the Jim Kennedy campaign attack Tony Williams on the basis of his friends, on the basis of the fact that his three wealthy suburbanites, who he will describe as libertarian, Kennedy will describe probably as libertarian Republicans, are out there trying to buy the election for them. And if some of that sticks and people think, I'm just not comfortable with Tony Williams, maybe some of that vote goes to Milton Street. Maybe some of it goes to Doug Oliver. I don't know.
Yeah, so at this phase, aren't we sort of at the point where Kenny and whoever are floating the Oppo research to you guys, hoping that you'll run it down, find that it's a story, and give them a headline that then goes in that ad narrated by the guy with that voice? You know?
Imagine the 30-second ad for Kenny, though. I mean, you know, the tack ad on Kenny, you know. Schooled at the knee of Vince Fumo, you know, thrust into the race by John Daugherty. I mean, if there's going to be, you know, anti-Williams ads about his associations, I think that the anti-Kenny ads about his associations are going to be just as effective, potentially.
And they could put more money behind them.
And they could put more money behind
them. You know, Johnny Dock behind him. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go, right? Yeah. So Williams would have to stumble. That indicates you believe he is still the front runner or the leader?
Well, I think you might call him the favorite, simply because of the simple racial math of the city. He is the one prominent African-American candidate with potential to advertise, and there are two relatively well-known white candidates with potential to advertise. And I think kind of the simple, crude math of racial politics suggests that gives him an edge. Now, in past elections, that hasn't always predicted a winner, but I think it does give him a starting point from which he can be seen as a guy, if he plays his cards right, he could win. I think when you add to that the fact that the three wealthy guys funneled $5 million to his gubernatorial campaign and seemed to be willing to do the same thing, I think those are two big advantages for him.
So, Patrick, you mentioned that we don't have any independent polling in the race. We just have polls leaked by campaigns. But the most recent poll leaked by campaign probably came from the Kenny camp, and it shows him in a virtual dead heat, right, with Anthony Williams?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a dynamic that some folks expected to emerge. I'm perhaps a little surprised that it developed so quickly, given that the Abrahams camp leaked a poll a few weeks ago that was taken about a month ago before the TV ads began in earnest, that showed her kind of doubling up both Williams and Kenny. But some folks have thought that her support was soft, was based principally on name recognition, and that would change when the TV ads began in earnest, and they have, although funded by PACs, by super PACs by and large. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a dynamic that could sort of dominate the rest of the race, Williams and Kenny. And the question is, you know, can Lynn Abraham come back? Can she hold Kenny back enough that the reason that we talk about the sort of the Kenny-Abraham dynamic is because of the racial math that Dave just explained. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's why you see, interestingly, Lynn Abraham, you know, punching Jim Kenny a lot more than she's punching, you know, the favorite in Tony Williams, because, you know, it won't be both Abraham and Kenny there at the end.
Going back to Milton Street, I think from the beginning he has been negatively profiled, and I don't think a lot of hopes had been gathered for him to be a successful candidate. But at the same time, I feel the message he has stated several times may have a lot of, or resonate a lot with the community grassroots.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about violence, and nobody else really is.
Yeah,
I was going to say, that's one of the things that's part of the message.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of just sort of the no-nonsense way he says
he's saying, forget about politics, revolution.
The question is, will anybody hear him? I mean, he won't be able to advertise. I guess he'll be on the televised debates. And his name is Street, and that will mean something to people on the ballot. I mean, Many? I don't know. How many votes did he get against Michael Nunn in 2011? Was it
about 27%?
It was like 30,000 votes. Now, that was when he was the only vessel to
protest
against Michael Nunn.
It could be a protest vote now, too.
Right.
Okay, so let's wrap this shining example of political conversation, the first episode of Upstairs at the PNP. Let's wrap it up with this question. From each one of you, what's a headline that we should expect to see in the next 2-3 weeks of this campaign that'll make a difference? What's something that's going to happen that we'll be talking about the next time we gather upstairs at the PNP?
Super PAC spending tops $2 million, and then it'll be three, and then it'll be four.
I mean, following on that, I think better than even odds that the Ethics Board gets involved in IE spending, that there's some sort of news around potential coordination violations with one or more of the campaigns.
But Patrick, will those actually drop before the election, or will we find out after the election that so-and-so broke the rules?
Good question.
No, they have shown no hesitancy about, you know, popping something before an election.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If it's ready. Yeah. So I think they will. I mean, they are clearly looking into some things that about the Anthony Williams pre-candidacy fundraising, and we'll see whether that amounts to
they're clearly that. And they're way more diligent than their federal counterparts. They're going to apply the law as diligently as they can, I think it's fair to say.
Holly?
Dazzle us. More endorsements for Jim Kenney, as you mentioned earlier, but I think we might actually see more black leaders get behind Jim Kenney.
Really?
Wow.
Really?
Which would obviously be a coup for him, but that's total prediction.
I don't know. My prediction for after the election would be Latinos get out and vote. But I'm not sure what the prediction is before the poll.
You think they will get out and vote?
That's a big question. Most of the candidates have been arguing that they're pushing for Latinos to get them out and vote, but it's only going to be known until the elections go by. But I think the fact that there's Latino candidates does make a difference.
I mean, Nelson's predicting a doubling in the Latino turnout.
Yeah.
Does that seem realistic to you?
It can. If they do the job well done, they can.
We've talked ourselves into exhaustion here upstairs at the PNP, so that wraps up the very first inaugural episode of Upstairs at the PNP, a political podcast for Philadelphia. Say that 6 times fast. So thanks to Dave Davies.
My pleasure.
Patrick Kirkstra.
Thanks.
Anna Gamboa.
Thank you.
Holly Otterbein.
Thanks for having me.
And at the controls with his usual deftness, Shai Ben-Yakov, and also Brett Rader. Thanks, guys, for making us sound so much smarter than we actually are.
And you are.
You're right, David. I didn't say that. My name would be Chris Cetullo, and I am from WHYY along with Dave. Yeah.
All right, right.
Oh, oh. So we're supposed
I
to
I was wondering when
upstairs
the clicking
at
would
the
come.
PNP.
This whiskey is so good.
I was promised tequila shots.
Yeah.
That never came.
I wasn't sure if you were serious about
it. Wait, were we still rolling when she said that? Because that's the best lesson.